you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
LAist Studios.
Just a heads up that we are not clinical experts, and if you need professional support, there will be some links and resources listed in the podcast description. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Yeah, No, I'm Not Okay. How are you? I hope you're doing better than okay, but if you're not, welcome, and thank you for joining me in this experiment. You know, one thing that I keep learning is that it's so important to find community with people who understand the value of mental health. And one person I found values mental health a lot, like a whole lot, is my new friend, Eric Andre. I know, right? Who knew? Eric is known for his absurdist comedy. He has the Eric Andre Show on Adult Swim, as well as his new movie, Bad Trip, on Netflix. And it was so important for me that Eric come on and talk about his experience and his passion for mental health, because he has some really interesting things to say about it, and I wanted to share it with you. But first, here's a clip of when we first met.
You want to boof this cheesecake?
Like, eat it?
No, boof it.
I don't know what boof is.
You got to parachute it into your ass.
Oh, my God. Take it. Take it there. God damn it. Ah!
Oh. And now if I got a fucking sugar rush. I think you should run for president.
God, it hurts to sit.
Can we start over?
Yeah, let's just take it.
Yeah.
I just
feel like there's
something. Obviously, this left a big impression, and I just had to know more.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Eric, thank you so much.
How are you? How's Atlanta?
Of course. It's good.
Is the Claremont Lounge open?
It is, actually. Like, Claremont Lounge is open and Swinging Richards
is open.
That's my favorite fucking night. Like, can I tell you the last time I was at Swinging Richards, like...
Man.
Somebody, like, knocked me out with a dick. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
Like, that really happened. Well, first I got a cock watch. And then some dude was, like, dancing on me, whatever. I really like this guy. He's great. very, very large penis.
Ernesto, I'm familiar.
No.
Familiar with his work.
Yo, he really, like, swung it back. And, like, it hit me in the forehead. Oh. And I fell aback. Like, I was like, whoa, I fell off my chair. And
how is that legal?
Eric, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
In this podcast. No, I'm not okay is what we decided on.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I think this is, like, my favorite topic to talk about, by the way. So, like, with no hesitation, I signed up for this.
Oh, that makes me very happy. This is my favorite topic because it's kind of like what I... I just talk about this all day long because I feel like I have to just tell people why I'm behaving the way I'm behaving on a daily basis. And it's just because I'm usually going through some mental health troubles or...
You seem very stable to me. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm actually shocked that you have any issues. I mean, we don't know each other well, but from the little bit we've chatted, you seem pretty even keel, especially for most actors that I know who are in planet Neptune.
You know, sure. I mean, so. I think that might have something to do with the fact that I was always trying to protect my family and always make sure that, you know, kind of always taking care of business, like while they were just off, like being like living their mental illness. I was always trying to protect them.
Are you the one in the family that tries to keep the family together? I don't know what the word is. Like everybody goes to you with their problems and you have to be like the referee.
Yeah. I like took on the role of like savior from a very like early age.
That puts a lot of pressure on yourself though.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's not.
Look, you're rubbing your neck. That's all neck and back pain shit.
It's definitely not good for like someone who's trying to just act natural and like be themselves.
What are you? So your parents are cuckoo or what's up?
Well, I feel like we've just experienced a lot of trauma at an early age. I think my parents experienced a lot of trauma at an early age, and so did my brother, and so did I.
Well,
and
yeah, your parents got like Gestapo'd, like ice kicking down their door, kidnapped, basically.
Yeah,
right?
They did get kidnapped. Yeah, exactly.
That's gnarly.
That is gnarly. And like I think they were in the States for 25 years. And like each one of those years was like them being afraid of being captured. But yeah, there was a lot of like hate from like many corners.
Well, you're in Boston, right? Are you from Boston?
I'm from Boston.
Yeah.
You experienced Boston, right? You went to Berkeley.
Yeah.
That's dope. You know, I was at Boston Arts Academy and you graduated 07? When did you graduate?
05. Yeah.
I graduated high school 04.
Okay, we get it. You're young.
No. I mean, whatever. First of all, we're
I get it. I'm one day closer to death.
We're close in age, okay?
Were we in Boston at the same time?
That's what I'm trying to say, yeah.
Oh, no way.
I was right in front of Fenway Park. That was where my school was, and you were in Berkeley. And I was like all up in the streets of where Berkeley was. I mean, I went to Spike's. You remember Spike's, the hot dog joint? Did you ever
Spike's,
indulge?
I don't know. I remember Crazy Dough and Little Stevie's Pizza.
Yeah.
But I was right on Peterborough Street, right across from Fenway. We would go to the roof and try to watch the Jumbotron of Red Sox games.
Right. I was right there. Yeah.
Get
and then
the
I
fuck out of here.
Yeah. And I would, my school would take us, like, I had classes at Berkeley as well. And like we did performances in Berkeley and stuff.
No way.
And, yeah.
It was a rat's nest. I had so many mice and rats in my, it was disgusting. I lived in squalor.
Okay.
Ugh.
Okay. Yeah. And then did you like the Fens when you would go by the Fens and there was like weird things happening in the Fens? You found like, I remember we found a dead body, some shit like
no
that.
No way. What?
Yeah. We found lots of stuff. We found a lot of stuff, a lot of sexual activity there.
Oh, wow.
I want to say thank you so much for having me on your show. Like,
of course. People usually don't say that after the interview.
You know what? I actually got like, people were really excited for me, like when they saw me on your show.
Your publicist was not so excited, I'll tell you that much.
And people really, really enjoyed watching me watch you shove cheesecake up your ass. So yeah. Ever so delicately, by the way.
Yeah, you know, I'm a pro. I've been there before. And I've boofed a lot of substances in my ass.
Now I'm boofing substances in my ass.
You didn't know what boofing was, and I educated you.
I didn't. You did. I mean, and that's why you're on here, because I feel like you have created this incredible space for folks. Like, first of all, you're smart as hell. You're thoughtful. You've created a beautiful space for folks to where they can relate and see themselves in your work. And I appreciate that.
Thanks.
So thanks for coming on.
Of course. Anytime. Yes. I appreciate you.
You studied music at Berkeley. Were you playing music at a young age?
Yeah, I did piano when I was 5. Mm-hmm. And then I did tuba in middle school, and then cello and bass in high school, and then I went to college for bass.
After high school, he moved to my hometown, Boston, and went to Berklee School of Music. Obviously, music is not his number one thing anymore, but he still geeks out over it.
You want to see my new bass?
Yeah, let me see. Right. Oh, shit. Look at that upright.
Oh, dum, 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 dum. Yeah, I just played the Seinfeld bass line. Boom, 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 boom.
You had to like carry that shit like all over Boston.
What a mistake. I'm an idiot. I'm a fucking idiot. So, a fucking moron.
So you basically saw the humor in you carrying that giant bass all over town, and then you decided to what? Start your career in comedy? Like, how did that happen?
I was in a band. I was in a shitty band. Mm-hmm. Actually, we weren't shitty. I actually liked my band a lot, but I think we played all of 3 shows in our career. And, you know, we were just doing these like open mics all around town. I did an open mic in like Cambridge, Massachusetts, in this bar called All Asia, which I don't know if it exists anymore. But my band played a show there, and I saw a flyer there that said open mic comedy night. And I was like, let me give that a whirl. And I tried it. I tried doing stand-up, and I fell in love with it instantly. The only reason I stood up, like, fell in love with it instantly, though, is because I invited my friends to the first few shows I did, and I was like, I'm a funny motherfucker. And then the 5th show I ever did, where my friends weren't there in the audience, and I did it for a bunch of strangers, also in Cambridge at this place called Comedy Studio across from Harvard, I bombed so hard, like so unbelievably hard, and then had a panic attack on stage, and it was just like, but I knew I just had to like get over my stage fright, and I just committed to it. And I don't know, I just fell in love with stand-up right away and realized that like the music industry, it felt like there was no rhyme. This is as I'm finishing college. I just felt like there was no rhyme or reason to who made it and who didn't make it in the music industry, because I knew Rick. Really, really virtuosic performers and amazing songwriters that were like totally poverty stricken, and like whoever, Ashley Simpson or some Justin Bieber schmuck was like, you know, a multimillionaire from it. So I was like, there's no rhyme or reason to this, but I felt comedy, if I get really funny, I'll at least have like I'll at least get a job doing something, writing for a show on cable or something. I'll be able to do something with this rather than upright bass, which is like, I'm just going to be playing weddings and like teaching jaded teenagers their scales. Like it just didn't, I was just looking at my future, and I was like, and I wanted to move to New York City, which I did right as I finished college. So I was like, I don't know, comedy just, it lit up my brain in a different way. I really liked it.
But were you always funny?
I was always a class clown.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't mean I was always funny. I thought I was funny.
Right.
But I always got class clown award, like, since kindergarten.
I
was so spastic in school. I was like... You know why? Because in the 80s, my diet was like apple juice, orange juice, and peanut butter jelly. Like, only sugar. So I was just like... bouncing off the walls. And I would get straight A's. I would, like, do my homework really fast in class... And like, as the teacher was teaching the lesson, and then like finish it and turn it in, the homework that was due like the next week, and then I'd just be like,
and you just wanted to mess around.
I was such a spaz. I was fucking nuts.
Did you have like ADD or anything like that growing up? Or like, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty. Is it not obvious? You've seen my show.
I've seen your show.
I'm like a fucking goldfish with my attention span. I'm like, huh, what's that?
Yeah.
I tried to do Adderall. It doesn't work for me.
So were you like, just thinking about your childhood, I mean, you said your dad was a psychiatrist.
He was, yes.
Right.
He just retired, yeah.
And so like, would he just like, if you were like acting up or like showing some, like you also talk about being experiencing some anxiety Like, would your dad just be like, here, take this pill?
No, not at all. He weirdly didn't, like, want to talk about work. He didn't bring his work home with him. But also, my dad was very aloof and absent in my childhood. Hmm. He was just like, my dad is, like, old school Caribbean. He's from Haiti. And, like, his parents had 100 kids. Like, my dad has, like, 100 siblings. And, like, he grew up where your dad kind of just ignores you and you don't speak until spoken to. He grew up in like an old school Catholic Caribbean thing. So like he didn't interact with me until I was like 25. He kind of just like ignored me completely.
Did that affect you?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, no,
look at me. Oh yeah, I'm doing fine. We didn't pick like a healthy, normal person career. You know what I mean? We're constantly like, hey, I'm searching for validation from strangers.
So did you experience like mental health problems as a kid then? Were you feeling anxiety then?
Yeah, I always had anxiety, and I don't know why it took me so long to figure out the importance of going to therapy. You know what? It really took until I moved here. So I went to college at Boston. I lived in New York for 5 years. Then I came to LA. And then when I started auditioning, I was so bad. No one's worse at auditioning than me.
I'm dreadful. I'm worse than you.
There's no way. I want to like dig up an old audition tape and show you how bad I am. Like look, like delivering lines into the camera, like dry swallowing and like looking at the sides, like I was a fucking mess. Especially when I started, I was a fucking mess. I had no idea what I was doing. I was so bad at it, and falling down from like having panic attacks in every single. Putting so much pressure on myself and having panic attacks in every single audition that I was like, there's no way, there's something wrong. There's no way I'm going to be able to make this a career if I have such bad stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
And then my acting teacher was like, why don't you go to fucking therapy? What are you doing? Right. I was like, oh yeah, duh. And then as soon as I started going to therapy, it was like such a release off my shoulder. My first therapist told me, like, why don't you start meditating? I started meditating. I still meditate twice a day. And just, like, everything aligned. And then I started booking things. And then I started actually having somewhat of a career. Then I sold the Eric Andre Show. But it all came from mental health. That's why I think this is, like, possibly the most important podcast I'm doing, because I think once I started prioritizing mental health and realizing that, no, mental health has to come first. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about, like, when I'm, like, preparing for an audition, I'm not like, oh, I got to memorize my lines first or I got to rehearse with my buddy first. No, it's like mental health has to come first. I got to, like, kick my day off meditating.
Mm-hmm.
I should journal. I'm a real hippie. I mean, I do, like, I was doing, like, Qigong and Tai Chi to, like, kind of fucking mentally balance. And stuff like that. There's a couple books I read that I think are like so important. I'm a big like, there's this guy, Dr. John Sarno, who wrote Healing Back Pain, which is a book that changed my life because I had like crippling back pain from the short and long of it. I'll try to like sum up the book very succinctly. It's like basically, your body experiences these chronic pains like back pain or neck pain or allergies or colitis or ulcers or fibromyalgia because it is trying to create distractions from undesirable emotions repressed and suppressed in your subconscious mind. And one of the main emotions is rage. And your rage comes from just the pressure you put on yourself to be like the best you can be, or like be an actor or be a musician or whatever you're pursuing. It creates rage inside because your childlike mind resents all that pressure you put on yourself. Another personality type is like what we're talking about with your situation, where like the person in the family that always tries to be like the referee and tries to balance everybody in the family and takes on all the family's problems and tries to play mediator. Like your subconscious resents that position and that creates internal rage in your subconscious mind and creates all these pains. So anyway, when I was like in my mid-20s, late 20s, I started figuring out prioritize mental health. That comes first, and then everything else comes after, because if you're not happy, there's no point to do anything. So
totally,
that's my, oh my gosh, that's my speech. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah,
I can relate to that too. I have some physical pain.
Yes. So basically, the pain is real. You are experiencing real pain. However, the cause of the pain is not coming from the little area. The cause of the pain is undesirable emotions, you know, suppressed in your subconscious mind. So the cure is therapy and journaling. What you do is voluntarily, instead of involuntarily, you voluntarily bring all those topics your mind's avoiding up to the surface via journaling or via therapy or both. Mm-hmm. So you're like, well, this is really corny, maybe oversharing, but like I wrote, like one of the first things I did, I wrote a letter to my dad that I would never send to him. Like, fuck you, dad. You were never there for me. That kind of shit. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote a letter, and like, I knew I was never going to send it to him. I wrote it all out. Everything I was ever pissed about from fucking year zero to now. Or like, you know, I wrote a letter to like the school bully that I never planned on saying. You just get that shit all out. And at first, mm-hmm. it's really stressful getting it out. It's really painful when it starts coming out, because all your mind has ever done up until that point is try to suppress it. Right. So at first, your body's going to start fighting it. You're going to have more pain and more stress. You're going to start crying. I broke out in hives one time during a breakup, but like my face closed up. You're going to have more pain at first, but that's just your body's last attempt of suppressing all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But what you really want to do is you want to voluntarily dig that dirt up, bring it to your conscious mind. And there's like, I think there's like a physiological component where it actually, your trauma crosses from one hemisphere of the brain to the other and like travels down the spine. And then you process the trauma. And then you have like this great, like, sense of relief afterwards. I mean, this is like, this took me like more than 15 years of therapy to get here, and I'm still figuring myself out, but
right. Were you like formally diagnosed with anything?
No, my therapist is strange. Like, they'll always like tease out my diagnosis, but I think they don't want me to like pathologize myself too much, because that'll like just create more anxiety.
Right.
You know, I have anxiety and like an obsessive compulsive thought process, and like the two kind of go hand in hand. Like, my anxiety is a way to cope with my obsessive compulsive thinking is a way to process my anxiety, or vice versa. And I'm a bit ADD, but my therapist always comes around to like, but don't get tripped up on that, like,
right,
it's almost not important.
Right.
You know.
Like labeling shit.
Yeah. I mean, if you have schizophrenia or bipolar 2 disorder, then yeah, you probably want to get diagnosed and you want to get on some kind of medication, because that's a pretty serious chemical thing going on in your brain, you know.
Right.
So that's, I think, a different bag. But that's sadder for me, people that are like undiagnosed bipolar, because they live a torturous life. That is fucking tough. That is not easy to do without like proper medical treatment.
I agree. Some people find it helpful to put a label on their diagnosis, and others don't. And I'm sure in some cases it's helpful to know what's going on.
Yeah, I watch like Kanye West interviews now, and I was like, man, I hope that guy finds the right doctor and like admit, like steps up to the, you know. I think he finally did, but like the last few interviews when he was in like Trump's office and he's talking to Trump, and he's like, hey man, it's like we're all connected, like fractal geometry, man. Yeah, well, pi equals 3.14155. I was like, oh
yeah,
man, that's rough. And I think like black and brown people have a tough time. Like, if you pitch them therapy, they're like, psh, I don't need that shit. I got a strong mind. And it's like, it's not about having a strong or weak mind. That's like the opposite. It's like inner peace, as hippy dippy as it sounds. But I think people from like a tough background too, they think that's like a sign of weakness, and they like are very reluctant to tell a complete stranger about all their traumas. But it's kind of like, that's who needs it the most.
That's who needs it the most.
Yeah, like the trauma. I remember Kendrick Lamar was on Howard Stern talking about his childhood, and Howard Stern stopped him. He's like, it's like you grew up in a war zone. Talking about growing up in Compton in the like early 90s or whatever. Like that. He's like, it's like not that much different than growing up in like Fallujah or Baghdad during the Iraq war. You know what I mean? The amount of like death that he saw every day. He's like, that trauma, that builds up, you know? So therapy's just a way to process the trauma and get like that relief. Your brain needs it. It's like going to the gym.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like, or going to the cleaners. It's like, you got to like, maybe the cleaners isn't a good example.
Yeah, cleaners is good.
But you gotta shed, or taking a shower. I don't know. You gotta fucking shed all of that dirt.
You shower at the cleaners in the gym.
Yeah. I feel like we have a lot of the same things going on. I think a lot of us.
I'm an Aries, bit of a something moon sign, fucking fire, big Gemini.
I don't think I know many Aries.
I don't know what any of that shit means.
It means something.
Yeah.
It means something.
Namaste.
Speaking of zodiac signs and things like that, I saw that you posted a very beautiful Valentine.
Yes.
The other day. I gotta admit, though, I was kind of like a little miffed about it. I was just like, okay.
you got a Valentine.
It doesn't matter what I do, Eric. Okay, it matters what you do and what everybody else is doing to me. Are you in a relationship?
Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. I love that. I love that for you. How is it? I mean, you're meditating what, twice a day?
Yes.
And you're going to therapy how many times a week?
I usually go 3 times a week. I'm going like once a week now.
Okay. That's still really good.
I used to book double. So I'm talking 2-hour sessions.
I know what you mean. I'd be doing two. My therapist actually had to tell me like if we should cut our sessions to like from an hour and a half to just an hour. And I was just like, what are you talking about?
You were like, don't leave me.
We were doing 2 hours, and she's like, I think you could do an hour and a half now. And I was like, pissed about that.
You're like, I'm not fucking leaving.
Like, I'm not fucking ready.
You locked the door from the inside.
But it's good. It's good. It's good that that means that like you're doing something right. How is that with your like relationship though? Like, I mean, I know like even if I do like,
you are so jealous. It's so adorable.
I'm burning up inside.
I can see you're literally sweating. You're tugging at your collar.
I'm so upset about you having a relationship. How does that work? Because I know that
tears start falling down your face.
Even though I'm still in therapy, and even though I'm working on myself and I'm healing.
Are you married?
No, I'm not married, but I'm in a relationship.
Yeah, how long you been going?
Okay.
You guys going strong?
Yeah, 4 years.
See, you moved in?
Oh yeah.
Share a dog?
2 dogs.
That's big.
That's huge.
And you're pregnant.
I'm not pregnant.
That's what I heard, though.
Okay. I heard you were pregnant.
That's what I read. And I
heard you were announcing your pregnancy.
Are you going to have children with this man? The audience needs to know.
Eric, I'm asking you about your fucking relationship, okay? Not mine.
Where is he? And why didn't you post a Valentine's Day pic? That's what the world, that's what your audience wants to know.
Oh, so, but I thought you just said I also posted a Valentine's pic. Are you on my Instagram right now? Do you see that I didn't?
I see that you didn't. And I talked to your man and he was pretty upset.
We're not the kind to like announce our love.
That's not what he said. That's not what he said. We play Zoom poker.
Okay.
We have a poker night and he was pretty, I'm going to assume his name is Dave. Let's say his
name
is Dave.
Why did you post a Valentine's on IG? Was that something? Because I've never even seen you post anything like that or anything romantic. Why did you post it this time?
I don't think we're talking about me right now.
I think we are talking about you. This is the Eric Andre show. You make it the Eric Andre show wherever you go. So that's what we're asking. Well, my real question was like, how do you make relationships work? Like, I know it's hard. Why I didn't post the Valentine's Day that day? Because probably I was probably being an asshole. I was probably like we call her that girl, which is like you know, the rage, anger inside me that mm-hmm. usually travels in the back seat. And I know that it takes a lot of work. Is that, do you find it hard to be in relationships? As hard as it is for me.
Both of us like awkwardly tap dancing through this conversation. I think but for everybody, you know what I mean? I think.
I'm asking for you. Do you guys do like couples therapy? Like, are you on in that state? How long have you been with your partner?
Like a year.
Okay. Are you guys doing couples therapy yet?
No.
Is that something you're open to?
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay.
I think that's like almost should be like necessary.
It is.
Right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
How do you traverse it?
But you will say that meditation makes dating easier? Being in a relationship easier?
Well, I think it makes everything easier. I think like it reduces your anxiety. Mm-hmm. It helps you process your thoughts. It helps with insomnia, you know, sleep hygiene. It helps with your bullshit tolerance. I can kind of deal with more bullshit throughout the day. It doesn't make you perfect. It's not a magic wand, but it makes life, coping with life, a little easier. Mm-hmm. I think.
Coming up, how Eric Andre thinks we can make mental health sexy.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
So Eric, can you tell me about this kind of meditation that you do? It's called transcendental meditation, right?
Yes.
Can you explain what it is?
I hang upside down like a bat and I slice one of my fingers open and then the blood drips into a candle and then I turn on the movie Interview with a Vampire and then I say,
not Blackula?
And then Blackula and then Dracula. No, it's actually very simple. You sit in a comfortable position with your eyes closed. I took a class and the guy gave me a mantra. If you don't have a mantra, you can just focus on your breath. You just want to, either a breath or a mantra, it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of like this meaningless, simple, minimal thing for your mind to focus on. So sit comfortably, close your eyes, then start breathing. You don't got to breathe fast or slow, just breathe regular. Think of the inhale, think of the exhale. Think of the inhale, think of the exhale. You can give it a color if that helps you think about it. And then slowly but surely your mind will start to wander. Thoughts will come in and out of your mind like ships on an ocean. And you don't judge the thoughts. They can be stressful thoughts, and that's actually healthy. That's your body, that's your mind processing stress. They can be positive thoughts. They can be neutral thoughts. You don't judge the thoughts. You just let them come and go. And then slowly, once you're like, oh yeah, I'm meditating, I'm thinking thoughts, then you slowly go back to the breath. In, out, in, out. The biggest complaint is people go, oh, but I fall asleep during meditation. That's kind of one of the best outcomes you could have. That means you're sleep deprived. If you fall asleep during meditation, it means you're sleep deprived. If you're thinking negative thoughts during meditation, that's great. That means you're processing a lot of stressful thoughts. If you're uncomfortable and you got to scratch your nose or you're not sitting comfortable, scratch your nose, stretch your legs, shift around. You can shift as much as you want to. The only thing you don't want to do when you're meditating is like lie down completely, like you're taking a nap. Because you will take a nap, you want to be like seated, but just seat. You don't have to sit like full lotus, like you're a monk, like right. from like 17th century Nepal. Just sit like how you're like watching TV, like sit on a couch, sit in a chair. It's really, really simple. And you don't have to do 20 minutes a day. You can do 1 minute a day. They say start out by just doing 1 minute a day. and then build to 5 minutes, and then build to 10 minutes, and then build to 20 minutes. But it's really easy, and I think people have a lot of... People think it's like, okay, you sit like full lotus in this uncomfortable, unnatural position, and you have to force... You can't think about anything. You have to free your mind of all thoughts, and if any thought came in, you fucked up. Mm-hmm. That's like... It's like the opposite of that.
I love that. That's me. I've been meditating too. And actually, I just recorded this because I'm submitting it to Headspace for you. I think you should be one of the voices on Headspace.
That's cool. I've never done Headspace because I'm not again. I think like all roads lead to the same thing. Whatever works for you, works for you. I'm not anti Headspace at all. I just don't like my phone on while I meditate.
Yeah.
I want to like avoid electronics.
You know what? I gotta say, I fucked up this Valentine's Day. I'm sorry. I did it up. Okay. I was gonna post something and I just got really grossed out with everybody posting shit. Like everybody's like, "This is me and my love," and I'm like, "Ugh." Fucking Kate Hudson was like, showed this video of like her and her man walking through a forest or some shit, and like you know that video where like some your man's videotaping you and you're pulling your man from.
With the hand. Take my arm.
Take my hand. Take my hand. Saw that.
Live, laugh, love.
I just saw like my whole life just, I'm like, I can't do this to myself because it didn't feel natural at that point. I do have a problem with like sharing my personal life like that.
Of course.
Online.
No, it's a tricky, totally. I'm busting your chops.
I know.
It's a hard needle to thread. You got to figure out like what is like fun and like makes me personable and relatable and fun to share, and what is like oversharing and like an invasion of my own privacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's I would never put my niece or nephew on my
IG.
Really, my sister even. I put my parents on a couple times, and that was me being like risque, but you know.
Yeah. I know it makes me, I just don't like people commenting on, and maybe this is part of my problem. Like I should not give a shit what people say. I just like, you can say anything you want about me, but like, as soon as you like comment something negatively about somebody that I love or care about, like that just makes me 100%. So angry, and it makes me hide even more. So I worry that if I post a picture that's so intimate that it's going to make me just,
you can disable comments.
Yeah, but then, yeah, you're right. Okay, I can do that. I'll disable the comments and put a whole family picture up there.
It's not as fun.
It's not as fun.
You don't get the dopamine drip of like, oh, I got a billion likes, and
I don't want that. I don't want that though. I don't want people commenting on my shit. I don't want you telling me anything about my relationship. You don't know it.
You're right.
So I think that's my, but gosh, I don't know, maybe
defensive much.
I'm a little defensive. You know what? Next time I'll do it when it's like not Valentine's Day. How's that?
Do it on Halloween.
I'll do it on Halloween. That's actually my favorite holiday.
Same.
Really?
I just booked. I'm going to Oaxaca. I'm doing, once I get that shot.
Yeah.
Vaccine. I, going to Oaxaca for Day of the Dead, October 31st.
What? Can I go?
Dios de la suerte.
¿Puedo ir? I'm serious. ¿Puedo ir?
Yeah, come.
I guess I could do whatever the fuck I want.
You can do whatever you want.
All right, I'll be there.
Come.
Simple as that.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Do you think that you use comedy to cope with your mental health?
I think so. I know not to overshare. You do need privacy. You do need boundaries. It's healthy. I think in the beginning I was trying to overshare because I wanted to emulate Richard Pryor. It's like, it's very like sexy to be vulnerable on stage. And I don't even mean sexy in a sexy way. I mean, like, it's like, it makes the audience open up when you have the confidence to be vulnerable on stage. And really open yourself up and go, this is me. I'm fucked up. I have this fucked up shit going on inside me. And I've always been embarrassed a bit about it, but I'm sharing it with you to kind of help me cope with it and help process it and help be relatable. So maybe I'm speaking too abstractly. I can't think of it like just watch my stand-up special, I guess, if you want an example. But I can't think of an example off the top of my head. But I'll tell you, I have done cocaine on stage one time and never again. My heart was pounding out of my chest. I was like totally fine. And my friend's like, you want a little bit of coke? And I was like, before I go on stage, I was like, well, Robin Williams did it. Ripped a line. And then my heart, I was like flop sweat, panic attack. I was like, what's the deal with your throat closing up? I was in this little club and I fucking melted like a candle. I was like, don't do coke before you go on
the
stage.
The moral.
Before you go on stage in front of a bunch of strangers. Yeah.
It's the worst. So basically, you speak for all comedians in saying that you're all mentally ill.
Yeah. I mean, some more than others. I think some people actually that I know have it pretty well together, surprisingly. It's always the opposite. The ones that act really fucking nuts on stage tend to be kind of like sane off stage. Mm-hmm. And the ones that kind of act like suave on stage are like a fucking mess. Like, I'm like, ha ha ha, please. No. Like, I know who, you never know. Like, somebody's stage persona does not indicate what they're like off stage all the time. It's always a surprise. I'll tell you that. Like some like really macho tough guy persona guys in New York that you'd meet were the biggest teddy bears when they got off stage and so sweet. Like, how you been, bro? What's going on? I haven't seen you in fucking forever, dude. And then the opposite, some guys that were like, hey, I'm like the hippie, like hipster, like nice guy, like, hey, you know, like Michael Cera wannabe guys would get off stage and they were total fucking asshole prick. Wet noodle handshake, classist, elitist motherfucker. I was like, get your fucking Ivy League ass out of here. So you never fucking know. It's a mixed bag. Never know. I think like my persona on the show is my id, is like the childlike part of my mind, and I'm getting it all out, and it's like this bizarro caricature of myself that is like somewhere within me, and I'm getting it all out on stage. But I wouldn't be able to function in society if I acted like that 24 hours a day. So, I don't know. It's just like kind of like the way I grew up joking around with my friends and trying to like out crazy each other, like in the lunchroom in middle school and high school, is kind of like my persona on my show. So I think people are bummed out when they meet me in person. They're like, this guy's fucking boring. I swear to God, this guy one time, I was online at a banh mi sandwich shop in Toronto, and I was like waiting to get a Vietnamese sandwich, and it was like 11:30 in the morning, and I was like filming something. It was like my lunch break, and it was like a walkaway lunch or whatever. I ran across the street to grab a sandwich, and this kid came up to me. He's like, "Oh, Eric Andre!" And he started yelling, and it was like quiet in the restaurant. I was like, "Oh yeah. I'm just getting a sandwich," and he like looked at me like I was his toy that was broken, and then he started punching me on the back. He was like, come on, man. And I was like, dude, it's not even 12 o'clock yet. I'm so hungry. Like, I wish I could like bounce off the walls and like kick a glass window in, but like, I'm just getting a sandwich, man. It's not that crazy. Yeah, I was like, it's early, man. And he was so disappointed that I was so pedestrian and lame, just getting a sandwich and some chips. Yeah. Oh, I broke his heart.
Okay, you're a very sexy guy, right? You make a lot of sexy content. You just, all your stuff is very, very sexy.
You know, I'm starting an OnlyFans account.
You are? Yeah, why not?
Why not?
But I'm fucking going on it. And if you're boofing any more stuff, I'm like, fucking it. I'm addicted to boofing.
I'm on boof.com.
I'm on boof.com now. Onlyboof.com. How do we make it?
You're getting hot under the collar there.
I mean, it was.
You're like, I got to get on boof.com.
That moment really changed my life. Seeing you boof that cheese. I've never seen. I really didn't expect that. I didn't know why you were doing it for me. I mean, I felt very special. For so, I was like, this is love. I'm like, this is what love is, yo. This dude was willing to boof this cheesecake for me, ladies. If your man ain't boofing cheesecake for you, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
That's right, girl.
That's right.
Yes, honey.
Get yourself with an Eric Andre because he will boof.
Yes,
for you.
Queen.
Find him on onlyboof.com. How do we make How do we make mental health sexy?
It's tough. I don't know. You know what? I think you got to stress. You got to stress that it's private. Like, if you really need therapy and you go, the therapist isn't allowed to tell anyone you were there. They're not legally allowed to tell anyone what was discussed. You have complete privacy and anonymity. And if you can't afford therapy, journaling is free, and your journal will not tell anybody what you put in it. And mm-hmm. that is incredibly therapeutic. Mm-hmm. Just get that shit out of your mind and onto paper. It's like, it's almost like a dump. Like, it's just like you're throwing it in the recycling bin. You got to get it off your mind, because while it's in your mind, it's just creating too much chaos. But I don't know. I think we're taking a step, you know, just talking mm-hmm. about it publicly and our struggles mm-hmm. with it. And, you know, I think I'm telling you, once I made the switch of prioritizing it, it's like the number one, it comes first. If you don't have your mind, that's it. You don't have anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. You see people talking to themselves on the street and you're just like, man, if they could get their mind back, you know, yeah. they would have peace. So I don't know. It's hard to sell. It's hard to sell. I think just talking about it. I wish I had the answer. I think you should run for office. I feel like you're so politically motivated and you have so much to say and you're so educated and bright. You know, I think you should run for office. I mean,
thank you. I want to help.
You have my vote.
Thank you, Eric. I want to help elect the right people to office.
Yeah, I think working in one of those offices has been fucking miserable.
I don't want to fucking do that.
It's a lot of work.
I'm like, I want to fucking sit home and boof cheesecake. I don't know what the fuck you want to do, but I don't want to be working in no office. Like, no thank you. There's people who can do that.
I want to boof cheesecake with Nithya.
Nithya Raman was elected as Los Angeles City Council member for the 4th District, and we did that. The people did that.
Yeah, she follows me on Instagram.
She's awesome. She follows me too whenever.
Yeah.
We got her elected.
Yeah. Or no, follows me on Twitter. I'm sorry. She follows me on Twitter. AOC follows me on Twitter too. Yeah.
Yeah, no biggie.
She
doesn't follow me, and I was about to get a tattoo of her on my body. But
I met her the night after she was elected. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, really?
I ran into her at the Stephen Colbert show, like in the hallway.
She's incredible.
And I was like, dude, you're about to be famous, man. She was very nice. Sweet. She was very tiny and very sweet.
I met her too. I met her at like this Teen Vogue thing. I was introduced to her by Maria Teresa Kumar, who's the, she runs Voto Latino.
Spanish.
Voto Latino. Mira. And so, and I met her, I met her backstage, and she was so beautiful and incredible. And I still have, she gave me her card. And I still have her card in my wallet.
That's cool.
Like the first, the was it 2018 she was running? Or 2000?
She's so cool. She's the babe of all babes.
So let's fucking elect more babes like that.
Totally.
That are going to prioritize mental health.
Yeah.
Right? That are fucking going to make sure that everyone has access.
Right. It comes down to universal health care. Really.
It does.
I mean, that's what our country lacks, you know. So I think that's a big part of it, too. I mean, like,
yeah,
it goes back around to universal healthcare.
That's the answer.
If you could walk into a therapist's office with no money in your pocket, get the therapy you need, get the privacy and anonymity that you need, nobody mm-hmm. has to find out, and then walk out without paying a dime, that would make a huge difference. But that's not the way of our country, unfortunately.
No, but we can fucking keep trying, and we can, that is, you know, at the end of like literally everything, you know, like you're promoting your show, you promote your show and you just be like universal healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's popular. I mean, there's people that vote Republican that are for universal healthcare. It is way more popular than Fox News, as you believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm moving to Sweden. Ta-ta.
What do you have coming out this year?
So I did a hidden camera prank movie with Tiffany Haddish and Lil Rel Howery from Get Out. And the Jackass producers. That comes out March 26 on Netflix.
March 26.
It's called Bad Trip. Yeah, March 26.
Is that like, are you so excited that you worked with the Jackass producers just because?
Oh, yeah. I grew up on Jackass. So like, Jeff Tremaine was the main guy. He's like the RZA of the Wu-Tang of Jackass. And he's my mentor. I mean, he kind of taught me so many trade secrets.
What do you feel like when that shit happens to you?
It's surreal. And I'm doing a cartoon on Netflix with Matt Groening, and I'm such a huge Simpsons fan, and like all the Simpsons writers and EPs are working on it. So like, it's totally surreal. I have to like write that stuff down in my journal to remember, like, I'm doing okay. Like, I'm working with the guy that made the Simpsons. He drew the Simpsons on a napkin and showed James L. Brooks, and 700 episodes later, he killed it, man. So yeah, and Jeff is like, Jeff's my mentor, so totally surreal.
Well, I'm so happy all that shit is happening to you. Thank it's you. Incredible. We're so proud of you. And
thank you.
It couldn't happen to a better person, really.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, No, I'm Not Okay is a production of LAS Studios. Remember to rate and review our show. I just found out that it helps other people find it. So if you like it, share it with your friends. The more people we can get to have conversations about mental health, the better. If you've got a story you want to share about how you deal with mental health issues, send it my way. Record it on your phone's voice memo app and email it to yeahno@laestudios.com. And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter to get the latest episodes with a note from me, recommendations from our listeners and our team, and listener stories. Sign up at laist.com/newsletters. Jessica Pilot is our talent manager and producer. Our executive producers are Leo G and me, Diane Guerrero. Web design by Andy Cheatwood at the digital and marketing teams at Southern California Public Radio. Thanks to the team at LA Studios, including Taylor Kaufman, Kristen Hayford, Kristen Muller, Michael Constantino, Robert Joe, Mildred Langford, and Leo G. And a special thanks to Brian Crawford. This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Additional support comes from the Angel Foundation, supporting transformational leaders, and by the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to improving the mental health care system for all Californians.
Studios. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at laist.com/sweeps.